On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh Bass and Marcus Barahal take you inside the Nets and break down the rumor mill. Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, could any of them find themselves in a Nets uniform next season? And we'll also talk about the upcoming NBA Finals.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are here on a Tuesday night, the Locked On Nets podcast, home of your daily podcast on the Brooklyn Nets, the team, the fans, the everything, the Brooklyn, the Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what is going on, my man?
Not much. You didn't even mention the Josh Bass, the you.
I know. I got so excited I couldn't even bother to mention myself. I am your fearless host, Josh Bass, a lifelong fan of the Nets since I was about 5 years old. Marcus is a new convert, but much like someone in Game of Thrones who's kind of become a member of the Faith of the Seven, he has been a rapid convert to the team and someone who is now a devout Netsist. Is that right, Marcus?
Yeah, sure. Just don't push me out a window. That's all I'll say. I don't really watch Game of Thrones. That's one reference I just tried to throw in there.
You watch bits and pieces
here and there with me. Yeah. Almost exclusively with you, the little bits that I have seen. So thank you for that, I guess.
You're welcome. You are very welcome. I remember, actually, I think this is the first time you watched Game of Thrones. It was in Game 7 of the Finals between the Warriors and the Cavs when the Cavs had completed their 3-1 deficit, winning the last three to take that series. And I think it was...
Yeah, for some reason, you
season,
like insisted on flipping back and forth
season
between
four finale.
One of the best
basketball
games.
Well, I was ahead of my
games.
Time because I knew 4 or 5 years later that when there was going to be NBA playoffs coinciding with Game of Thrones, everyone was going to be watching Game of Thrones. Back then, it was completely on the finals. So
yeah, you were a real trendsetter.
How time, I really was. I mean... I think if it was Game 7 of the NBA Finals, it would be a lot different compared to when it was Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals. But still, I definitely knew that there was always going to be a clash between Game of Thrones and the NBA playoffs. In this episode of Locked On Nets, we're going to get into some of the rumors surrounding Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving. We'll talk a little bit about the upcoming NBA Finals between the Toronto Raptors and the Golden State Warriors. And that's going to probably be today's episode. We're going to get back to you later this week with a bit more of a detailed breakdown on the Nets' new hires, getting two assistant GMs, Jeff Peterson from Atlanta, and then Andy Birdsong from the San Antonio Spurs, and breaking down those hires, what it means for the Nets and what it means for their infrastructure, considering they did lose a lot of key personnel. As Nets fans would know, this offseason, including Trajan Langdon going to, I think, the Pelicans.
New
GM of the Pelicans. He'll be reporting directly to David Griffin. And then Chris Fleming going to be the lead assistant on Jim Boylan's staff in Chicago.
Sure.
So interesting move there for Fleming to go from the Nets to Chicago. But maybe he'll try to make the Bulls and Jim Boylan a bit more forward-thinking. First move, eliminate the suicides. But Marcus, give us a breakdown because we've been hearing a couple rumors recently. First, let's talk about Kyrie Irving, who's been linked to the Nets sporadically throughout these last year or two. Obviously a New Jersey native and someone that the Nets have a lot of admiration for. And apparently that admiration is mutual, and it would come with D'Angelo Russell and Kyrie teaming up in the backcourt, as opposed to what a lot of people would think, where the Nets would try to sign and trade Russell and then sign Kyrie Irving for someone that they think is maybe a bit more higher upside point guard than D'Angelo Russell, for better or for worse.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that those two guys could play together. I think they're both good enough shooters off the ball. They can both obviously handle and create. The only thing that would cause is then you have between those two, between Dinwiddie, who signed the extension, and Caris LeVert, you kind of have an excess of ball handlers, which the Nets kind of had already. Like, even if they don't sign Kyrie, they kind of already have that problem a little bit. So I would think that Dinwiddie is probably the guy who then would get moved over LeVert. I think Caris is kind of like a big piece of the future. So I think that hypothetical Kyrie D'Lo fit would work. It would just necessitate trading Dinwiddie, who's been like such a big part of the team the last 2 years, and obviously you and I are big fans of him, so I think we would both be a little bummed about that. So
yeah, I definitely would be heartbroken. I don't, like, who do you see as the best fit alongside Kyrie? Because for me, almost, unless he's the unquestionable number two guy, like playing alongside LeBron or KD or whomever, it's so tough for him to find a good fit for him as the number one guy, because he's so ball dominant. And while a great scorer, he's not necessarily the most inclined passer, doesn't have the best vision. So it's hard to kind of think through who would be the best fits around him. And I don't know if that would be another ball dominant guard in D'Angelo Russell, who's someone that he can play off the ball really well, really good spot up shooter. But at the end of the day, he's at his best with the ball in his hands still.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting because I almost feel like Al Horford, who he just played with, is like the exact type of guy who you'd want Kyrie with, like someone who can cover up on the back end defensively, can be a willing passer when he gets it like in the high post or on the elbow, but also like isn't necessarily looking to score and is fine deferring, like that kind of player, like a Klay Thompson type, just a guy who maybe has the talent level to be the best guy on a team, but is... doesn't have the ego of the best guy on the team.
Yeah, I agree with that. Kind of like an Al Horford type. So thinking of maybe like a Jokic, Marc Gasol in his prime.
Right, yeah.
Those are the type of guys. And yeah, that's not really someone the Nets have. Obviously, Jared Allen's a promising young center. He has his faults, but still has a lot of talent and potential, but definitely someone more in the rim running mold. Doesn't have a ton of ball skills to speak of. Still really working on his shooting range, his hands, his touch around the basket. So it would be interesting to see how Kyrie would play with that kind of a guy, because he hasn't really had kind of a high-flying center. Tristan Thompson, kind of, but even then, he doesn't really have that kind of athleticism to get up for alley-oops as much.
Yeah, and Thompson was kind of undersized. Like, they used him at the five, but Jared Allen, I think, is like a couple inches taller, and I think he's just way more explosive than Tristan Thompson. Doesn't necessarily give the same effort, but I think size-wise, he has him beat.
Yeah. Both Texas bigs, so I wanted to throw the comparison out there at least. Yeah, I think, you know, obviously if you have the ability to get a guy like Kyrie Irving, he's so talented, you have to pursue it. But defensively, that backcourt would be an abomination. They just don't have the size, the speed, the awareness. And then when you think about those two and a guy like Caris LeVert playing the three, Caris is a really good defender and really has the potential to be a top guy, not top, maybe not top guy, but like a very above average guy at his position defensively. But he's probably at his best defending ones and twos where he can use his length, but he's not going to be able to guard these bigger wings just because he doesn't have the size or the frame to do that. And with someone as injury prone as him, it could really take a toll on his body. So I don't know, I just feel like that combination wouldn't be great. I feel like Dinwiddie and Kyrie, or Dinwiddie and D'Lo, is actually a cleaner fit, even though they don't have the talent. Even though he doesn't have the talent of those other guys.
Yeah, because Dinwiddie brings a lot more size, and just you can like put him on a bigger guard and feel confident with that. And I totally agree with what you said about LeVert, where he's a great defender, but we saw it in the Philly series where the Nets didn't really have anyone to match up with those bigger wings. Even a guy like Ben Simmons or Tobias Harris, like they kind of resorted to Jared Dudley, who did a better job than I think most people would have expected. Mm-hmm. But obviously that's not like a long-term solution. So I think that their biggest hole is going to be the 3-4 position. Like, even if they bring in Kyrie, like, that's still a big hole. And I think it would be like a slight upgrade on what they just had in the backcourt, but I think that there are more pressing needs than upgrading that backcourt.
Yeah, and also they still wouldn't be able to guard kind of like the Redick types, guys that are just running around screens constantly, because that's not Kyrie or D'Lo's forte. LeVert really struggled with that. And Joe Harris doesn't really have that capability as well. You need someone to guard kind of those shiftier wings, like a Bellinelli, Patty Mills, those guys that are just constantly sprinting around and can really hurt you if they're getting open from three constantly.
Yeah, it's ironic because the Nets have that guy on the offensive end in Joe Harris, so like they should be used to it, you would think, in practice, but they can't really defend it. So
it's tough man.
Yeah.
It's interesting. We'll see what happens. I don't think this is super likely. I think it's kind of a pipe dream, but obviously it's great to hear that the Nets are in the mix for these top free agents. Another superstar that the Nets are in the mix for, it's Anthony Davis, and we'll talk about him after this. Today's show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com. Don't feel some type of way that your friend is going on an exotic trip. Book your own with Hotels.com. and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com, be there, do that, get rewarded. I am going to North Carolina tomorrow morning. I will be staying overnight using hotels.com. I always do it. I love it. You get free nights and stuff like that. And it's actually pretty good stuff and really makes it worth it. You know, there are times when you're using all these different hotels, it's hard to kind of get any rewards in a centralized manner. Hotels.com does that for you. Today's show is also brought to you by Untuckit. Thanks to Untuckit for sponsoring Locked On Nets. If you are looking for a great Father's Day idea, which I probably am, I definitely am actually.
Shout out to Barry.
Expects any kind of gift. Their shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com, promo code MBA to get 20% off. And lastly, today's show is brought to you by Grip 6, the ultra lightweight with no holes, no flap. It's a great Father's Day gift. Go to Grip 6, has a special offer for you at grip6.com. Lock, L-O-C-K-E. Let's get back into it. Of course, Marcus, we are sponsored by the Himalaya Podcast app. Wherever you get your podcasts, I prefer Himalaya. It's free, super easy to use, and has literally every single podcast that you love or you'd be searching for. It's great stuff. And let's get back into it. So, Marcus, there's a guy by the name of Anthony Davis who, after the Pelicans won the lottery, I thought he'd be open to staying. They got David Griffin as their GM. Now they're going to have Zion, Drew Holiday, something brewing in New Orleans. But it seems like Davis is steadfast that he still wants to get traded. And it looks like the Nets are emerging as a possible contender in the mix here.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned David Griffin. I think he's actually the executive vice president, technically. And a guy who we just talked about in the first segment, Trajan Langdon, is the new GM in New Orleans. And so there's been history in the NBA, like when the Celtics pulled off the Kevin Garnett trade. You know, they had former Celtic Kevin McHale on the other end. Maybe having Trajan Langdon, a guy now with New Orleans, who is very familiar with everything Brooklyn has to offer, and maybe there's some kind of like sentimental attachment even to certain guys. Maybe that becomes more enticing for Brooklyn's possible package.
Yeah, no, I would really hope so. I think kind of what people have been hearing, the most likely trade, if this were to happen, would be D'Angelo Russell via sign and trade, Jarrett Allen, and then a combination of draft picks, and maybe the Nets throwing a guy like Rodions Kurucs as well. If you're the Pelicans, what do you think of that trade package versus what you're seeing from the Celtics, Lakers, Knicks, any other suitors out there? Because I think, besides probably the Celtics, if they were willing to go all out, I think it stacks up pretty favorably.
Yeah, and the thing with the Celtics is that their offer is so contingent on if Kyrie Irving is coming back to the team or not. Because if he is leaving, possibly for Brooklyn, like we just talked about, I don't think that the Celtics would want to make that trade because it's like a huge gamble, especially given Davis's like clear uncertainty about everything. And he kind of, like Durant and like Kyrie, seems like the type of guy who is a little wishy-washy. So I think that they would be wary to commit that kind of thing. So then it's basically the Lakers and the Knicks who seem to be the two most active names mentioned, kind of. So for the Knicks, the best asset there would be the third pick. And for the Lakers, depending on Brandon Ingram's health, it would be either him or I guess maybe now this fourth pick. So I think D'Angelo Russell, who's already made an all-star team, who seems like he's on an upward trajectory, I think he has a higher ceiling than he's already shown. So I think that getting a guy like him, obviously reuniting him with Julius Randle, that would be big. And yeah, I think that the Nets are they're in the discussion, I think, with that package. You might have to throw in a guy like Caris LeVert. I don't know how you'd feel about that. But when it comes to getting a guy like Davis, you kind of have to put all your chips in.
Yeah, but the only thing why I'm reticent about that is because this would really be contingent on Kyrie coming, because if Kyrie doesn't come and you're trading all that, there's no way AD is staying his free agency hits next year. So like, you need to get the trade done, of course, but you also need to do it in a way where the Nets still have enough ammo that there could be a really good team and that entices AD to stay. And that's why it's just such a risky proposition, unless you're a team like the Lakers, which is just clearly his preferred destination and the one team that he'll definitely sign with, no questions about it. So even though AD is just an incredible talent and I'd love to have him in Brooklyn, it's a very precarious situation that any team finds themselves in that are looking at trading for him.
Yeah, and the Nets in that respect are kind of in a similar position to the Celtics, where it's not a lock that he would re-sign. You kind of need another guy there, and it seems like Kyrie is like the pivot point in these trade talks. Like, I think a lot of people have kind of linked those two together, Davis and Kyrie, and so wherever Kyrie chooses to sign, if Davis hasn't already been traded, it could be instructive as to where he would be traded, or vice versa. Like, if Davis gets traded to the Nets, like maybe before the draft, then maybe that means that they know that they have someone else coming in a week or two.
Yeah, and what's the Kyrie AD relationship like? Because I see them getting linked a lot, and I guess they're friends, but like I never heard about this 6 months before.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all these guys who play like on the Olympic team or on the All-Star teams, like they're all kind of friendly at the very least. And I think, I don't know, because Davis obviously went to Kentucky, but he was on that Team USA like very early before I think he even played in the NBA.
Yeah.
In 2012. And so he's kind of been in this circle longer than his age would suggest. And so I think him and Kyrie are kind of peers, and they're, I think they might both be 26, but they're definitely like in that same age range. And so it makes sense that they want to play together. Their skill sets complement each other. So I think the on-court fit would be really good. And I think that they're just trusting, I guess, the fact that they're both great at the same thing. So they'd probably get along off the court. I don't know. But the talent-wise, it's kind of hard to argue with it.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I guess that makes sense. I mean, they were drafted 1 year apart, so I'm sure they came up in the same circles, especially once AD had his big growth spurt and became a really highly touted prospect, similar to how like Chris Paul is boys with Melo and D-Wade and LeBron, right. Even though they're not in the exact same class, just because, or they might have been in the same high school class. He might have been in the same high school class as one of those guys, but still, like same age, same, they probably ran into each other kind of on the circuit, as well as kind of doing sponsorships and all that. So I guess it makes sense, but I don't know. From a basketball standpoint, do you think that's a great fit?
I do. I mean, I kind of think that anyone can fit with Davis, and mm-hmm. Kyrie is obviously special with the ball, and Davis can kind of play both on and off ball. He's a better passer, I think, than gets talked about, and he's obviously a great defender inside when he's healthy. And so I think him and Kyrie could be like kind of lethal in the pick and roll. Like, Davis, like you just talked about in the last segment, Kyrie and Jared Allen, how he's never played with a guy like that. I mean, Anthony Davis is like miles ahead offensively of that. And I just think, I mean, you spread it out with like shooters around and you have them too at the top. It's just like, I don't know what you really do against that.
Yeah, no, it's, listen, man, it's making me dream. There could be some really cool things happening in Brooklyn. I think if you get an understanding from Kyrie that if they Nets were to trade for AD, he would come, I think that's kind of has to be something that you consider very strongly, because you're basically replacing D'Lo with someone that's definitely better right now and has a higher ceiling in Kyrie Irving, regardless of what you want to say about his faults. Clearly a better player than D'Angelo Russell, even though D'Lo had a meteoric improvement this year, and it would suck to give up on him so quickly. Not giving up, even, because you're trading him for a bona fide superstar in Anthony Davis, but being able to get a franchise changer like AD, and then obviously having Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson in place, and their proven history of being able to surround the Nets with like competent role players and finding guys off the scrap heap that actually have a lot of ability to contribute, it could be a really lethal combination. So we'll see how it pans out in the next couple of weeks, and obviously leading up to July 1st when free agency hits.
June 30th now.
June 30th, yeah, excuse me, 6 p.m. We will be covering it all, but there's still some basketball to be played at the NBA Finals. I know Nets fans are dreaming of draft, free agency, all that, but there are 7, if possible, games to be played, at least 4, though, and we will preview that coming up. Marcus, I don't know about you, but I've actually been pretty entertained by these conference finals. Not as much the Warriors sweep over Portland, but I actually was really liking the Toronto and Milwaukee series. I was rooting hard for Milwaukee, especially for our boy Brook Lopez. And after they took a 2-0 lead, I was pretty giddy. But Toronto came back, won the next 4, including a really tough win in Milwaukee in Game 5, and then closing it out Game 6. In the Air Canada Center. That's what it's still called, right?
Scotiabank Arena, I think now.
Scotiabank. What are these arenas? Fiserv, Scotiabank, these arenas are changing.
Little Caesars.
Literally all the time. Yeah. Talking Stick. Is that still Talking Stick?
Yeah, in Phoenix.
Yeah, these are all terrible names. But I was really impressed by Toronto. They've come such a long way since that first upstart Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan team. But it's cool to see kind of how they've been able to rise into a team that was consistently getting destroyed by LeBron every year. Now they make the finals. The kind of Jurassic Park outside the arena is just contagious. Like, they truly love their basketball. So while it would have been great to see Milwaukee get back to the finals after all these years, I'm definitely happy for the Raptors making their first appearance. But do they have any chance in against Golden State? And kind of what's your perception of this matchup going to be? What have you seen so far from these two teams throughout the playoffs that's going to inform your opinion in this finals matchup?
Yeah, Toronto's been super interesting for me, at least, because they kind of, their stock has gone like up and down, it seems like, throughout. And they lost that first game to Orlando, and everyone was kind of like, oh, here we go.
Augustine.
Yes, DJ Augustine, noted playoff hero. But everyone was kind of like, same old Raptors, like they're just going to choke like they always do. Then they won four straight, and they seemed to right the ship. Then in that Philly series, they went down 2-1, and then they like really had to battle. And by the end, in game seven, it was just like a complete like shit show on offense, and they were just like couldn't get baskets unless it was like either a foul or Kawhi Leonard rattling home an impossible jumper. And then it seemed like that was continuing a little bit, at least in the first two games of the conference finals. And then all of a sudden, once they came home, once Fred VanVleet had his new baby, they just seemed a lot better offensively, and the movement was back, the passing was back, guys were more willing to shoot. Marc Gasol talked about it in his like interview with the Inside the NBA guys after game three, where he kind of understands that he has to be aggressive offensively on this team, not necessarily shooting the ball every time he gets it, but just making a quick, decisive action and either a pass or a dribble or whatever it is, just because for their team to generate open looks, they don't have an elite passer, I would say. Kyle Lowry is their best passer, but like Kawhi, who's their most ball-dominant guy, isn't the best passer, so they need to move constantly. They need to make quick decisions so that the defense is a little more scrambled and those passing lanes are a little more open. And I think once they started doing that, Milwaukee got a little flustered. And then Toronto's defense is what I think is going to be their biggest strength in this series, where they were able to stop Giannis. And with KD ruled out for game one, I think that there is a real shot for Toronto to kind of take this first game and put the pressure on Golden State in game two early in the series. So I think it's going to have to start defensively and then with movement off the ball. Offensively.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point. And like Toronto, I think you put it really well. They don't have any like amazing passers. Like even Kyle Lowry, he's a great ball mover, but he's not a great passer. He's not someone that's going to create something out of nothing. He's going to find the open man and make sure they get the ball as quickly as possible to put them in a good scoring opportunity. And I think the thing with not having KD there is that it gives Toronto, who has three really good perimeter defenders in Kawhi, Danny Green, and Pascal Siakam, more ability to really lock up Golden State's guards. So instead of them having to focus all their attention on KD, now Kawhi can guard Steph for moments at a time and make sure that he's not going off. But ultimately, I just think Golden State's experience is going to give them the edge here. And you look at the way Draymond especially has been playing since he lost all that weight, he's been an absolute machine. And like, I think he's one of the few people that can really lock down a Kawhi, really lock down a Pascal Siakam. And you know, it's great because Kawhi has been just so phenomenal these playoffs. And you look at Toronto and Milwaukee, and they were pretty similar. They had one absolute superstar and a bunch of really good complementary role players. But ultimately, I think Milwaukee might have had the better supporting cast overall. I think more versatile and more talented if you compare player by player. But ultimately, Kawhi got it done over Giannis, and that was the key to the game. But when you have a team like Golden State that has Iggy, that has Draymond, that has Klay, they know how to be there. They can get hot at any time. They have a bunch of dudes in McKinney and Looney that have really been empowered over these first few playoff series, and they really are not going to be afraid of the moment, I don't think. I think it's going to give them the edge in Golden State, especially if KD or Boogie are to come back at some point this series, and it looks like KD will probably come back maybe game three or so, and Boogie possibly earlier. I just think Golden State's going to be able to get it done. I would probably say Golden State in five, or maybe Golden State in six, but I have no doubt that they'll win the series.
Yeah, I mean, I still do think Golden State's going to win. I would probably say six games. I think Durant actually, I'm seeing, like, traveled with the team to Toronto, so I guess there is a possibility that he plays game two, but I'm still not counting on it. But In terms of Kawhi, obviously it's going to be like a tough defensive assignment for the Warriors, and they've kind of used Iguodala on Harden and on Lillard with Durant out, like kind of putting him on the primary guy. But Kawhi, with his size, like he's a lot bigger than either of those two guys, and Iguodala can obviously handle it, but he did tweak his, I think, hamstring in that last game, so he's not necessarily 100%, and he's getting older, and Kawhi is just like on another level right now. And even a guy like Klay Thompson is a little bit smaller. Like, the Warriors kind of saw it when they battled against LeBron. Like, you need a guy with the size and the speed and, like, kind of everything rolled into one. And so a guy like Klay, who's maybe a little small, or Iguodala, who's maybe, like, a half step slower than he used to be, or Draymond, if he's not at 100%, like, Kawhi's a guy who can take advantage of those small, small, small defensive weaknesses. And so I think it's going to be huge, like, how quickly Durant can come back. Because, obviously, they've played really well without him, but I don't know. I don't think they needed him against Portland, and they did win that Houston like game and a half, I guess, without him. But I don't know. I think for Kawhi, defensively, they need Durant.
Yeah, I don't know. But like, even still, Kawhi, like, he was great in the Milwaukee series. Don't get me wrong. Especially you look at his first three games. Game five, he was awesome. But in that closeout game, game six, he dropped. I mean, he had 17 rebounds, 7 assists. But on his 27 points, it was on 22 shots and 11 free throws. So it's not like he was super efficient. They were making him work for his points. It really came down to the fact that Milwaukee's guys kind of choked. Like, Giannis had a terrible game offensively. Bledsoe couldn't do anything. It was really like Middleton for the first few quarters, Brooke Lopez, Giannis here and there, but like, they didn't have the consistency that the Warriors are going to have.
Yeah, but part of those misses were just because, like, he'd draw an extra defender, and then, like, down the stretch you saw Pascal Siakam get, like, big offensive rebounds because he's left uncovered because people have to rotate. So, like, if that happens, and then the other big thing for Golden State is those guys you mentioned, like Looney and McKinney. If they can show up in Toronto, I think it probably will be, like, 4 or 5 games. But if those guys don't contribute, like, with Durant out, Golden State has a very short rotation if those guys aren't delivering on the road in the finals, which... I mean, they've played well, but McKinney still hasn't proven it on this stage, and Looney has played a lot better this year, but was kind of a liability in the past at the highest level. So I think he's better than he was in the past, but I still kind of need to see it, yeah. I think.
No, I think it's a good point. They can always unleash Damian James. Damian Jones, I'm sorry. I'm confusing him with former Nets first-round pick Damian James of Texas, who is a huge
bust. This is a Nets podcast.
And he was known for showering 4 times a day, I think. But yeah, Damian Jones, they can break him out as the secret weapon. But we'll see what happens. We'll check back in periodically a couple times throughout the finals, in addition to the Nets news that will be thrown your guys' way. But that's going to do it for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. I am at JMBass_. Please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, specifically the Himalaya podcast app, our favorite way to listen to podcasts. It has personally curated playlists made for just you by our expert podcast tastemakers. You can actually share podcast playlists. I'm going to drum one up and send it over to you, Marcus. I think
Please
you'll
do.
Like what I've been listening to. A lot of NBA podcasts, including our brethren and sisters. I don't know if there's a word like brethren for sisters. On the Locked On Podcast Network. We will talk to you guys again later this week. And until then, be well.
Bye.